Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. A recent Gallup poll found that immigration is the number one problem facing the U.S. Anti-immigrant rhetoric is nothing new in this country's history. The struggle for political control has further inflamed that rhetoric. Take recent comments by former President Trump.
And we know they come from prisons. We know they come from mental institutions, insane asylums. We know they're terrorists. Nobody has ever seen anything like we're witnessing right now. It is a very sad thing for our country. It's poisoning the blood of our country.
Negative rhetoric about immigrants and the border can be directly tied to acts of violence, including the 2019 mass shooting at an El Paso Walmart. Creatives across the country are fighting back against these narratives by writing their own. The Reclaiming Border Narratives Project was created in 2020 as a partnership of the Ford Foundation, the Center for Cultural Power, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, and the National Association of Latino Arts and Culture, NALAC. The project recently launched its newest cohort of grantees from both sides of the border. They're using their platforms to rewrite border narratives via photography, filmmaking, music, poetry, and activism. Today, we're talking to three members of that cohort. Evan Apodaca is a video artist based in San Diego, California. His public art installation, Monumental Interventions, uses the images of toppled beheaded monument busts to speak against the local military-industrial complex and how it impacts the border and border narratives. Laura Molinar is the co-founder of the San Antonio Social Justice Collective, Sueños Sin Fronteras de Texas, translating to Dreams Without Borders of Texas. The collective works at the intersections of reproductive justice and immigrant justice and is led by Latinx women of color. And we're also joined today by musician Amalia Mondragon of the El Paso Juarez border. The Latin Grammy-nominated singer and composer describes herself as a two-spirit performer who also sings as Tereso Perfecto Contreras, who she describes as the materialization of her masculine side. Mondragon's music explores gender fluidity, migration, and life on the border in the Chihuahuan Desert. Mondragon explains the themes she explores in her songs.
One of the main themes is definitely gender performance, how we genderize bodies and how we genderize genres and music and how I live life as a two-spirit person. The other themes are the desert, border life, dreaming what the border would be like without the border. Like, what would it be like without the wall? And just focusing on how we live regular lives that are also complex. It just seems like a lot of the narrative revolves around militarization and death. It revolves around also victimization, which all of these things are there, but we are also resilient people who take a stand for ourselves. We love the place that we live in.
I think we're going to transition next to Evan. Evan, you're from a different part of the U.S.-Mexico border. You're in San Diego and Tijuana, and your art focuses on militarization of the border. Now, what we were just talking about, the El Paso Juarez border, you see the militarization there on the border with the Border Patrol right now, with the state troopers there, a presence all up and down the Texas-Mexico border. You're seeing it differently. Can you tell us a little bit more about how your art focuses on highlighting that militarization?
I would say my work turns the lens, so to speak, away from communities that reside in the borderlands and turns it to the framework of violence and really expands the idea of the border itself, beyond the line itself, beyond the wall. San Diego is known as the most militarized metropolitan region in the U.S., and that all branches of the military are there, hundreds of defense contractors that manufacture and distribute weapons for the war that is happening in Palestine at this very moment, and really just looks at militarization linking like struggles in the borderlands to struggles all over the world. Really brings truth to analysis of this kind of violence, and really speaks things that are not accepted in public spaces. And that really came to focus in a work that I created that was a result of Nalak funds that was censored in an exhibition at the San Diego International Airport due to like complaints about the analysis that the work brings up. The work that I created is a collection of like testimonies and performed monologues by people in the community in San Diego that talk to all of those aspects of the region.
This film that I was able to see, or at least clips from it, it's really fascinating. There are these fallen monuments, fallen busts of individuals there. And they're talking to you about, you know, the demilitarization. They're talking to you about the glorification of military violence.
If we think about it, it's commemorating, it's celebrating the military interventions as if they are battles that have been won, rather than thinking of them as commemorating someone that lost something, right? Like a racialized population lost land, perhaps money, perhaps then, right, they're not being represented in this history. It's a very one-sided, very sanitized history of state violence.
And it's just really interesting to see these fallen monuments cracked, beheaded, and against a backdrop of the ocean or against the backdrop of an amusement park. And it's intercut with scenes of tourists taking pictures of, you know, naval ships or with ammunition going off in the background.
Yeah, that's kind of the nature of San Diego, exactly that, and that it glorifies war in a very commemorative, patriotic sense. But when different truths about that industry come to light, the powers that be see them as non-patriotic, un-American, and so forth. And so, yeah, San Diego is a very strange place, and the word militarism is something that's used to describe the phenomenon where there's tourist industry that celebrates these giant aircraft carriers. People take tours on the aircraft carriers. You know, there's events where you can play with all the newest technology, and that's showcased to people in public spaces. And so, yeah, those are the kinds of scenes that are pictured in this particular video installation. At this point, when this piece came out, you know, we had seen the dismantling of many like colonial monuments, Confederate monuments, but on the West Coast, there's many imperialist monuments. And so the idea struck interest to display this work in a public place because the curator saw these visually appealing, very surrealist scenes where these statues were talking and the toppled monuments. But when the truth comes out about the violence that is sort of bought and sold in a local sense, the work is taken down very swiftly due to very simple complaints.
What I think is really fascinating, we're only talking just about a couple of the projects that are involved in this particular Border Narratives project, and it doesn't necessarily involve filmmaking or artwork or even podcasting. So I want to talk to you next, Laura, about your project. The artistry medium it's categorized under, it's not photography, it's not filmmaking like I was just mentioning, it's social justice collective. So tell us a little bit more about Sueños Sin Fronteras de Texas.
So Sueños Sin Fronteras was first formed in 2018 during the height of the family separations happening at the U.S.-Mexico border, specifically in the Rio Grande Valley. And even though I don't live directly, you know, on the border, I mean, the border from San Antonio, it's about 155 miles away. You know, I still witness the militarization, you know, here in San Antonio, the increased militarization, the surveillance, you know, happening at the border. And so when family separation started happening, it was during the Trump administration in 2018. So we worked out of the Humanitarian Respite Center run by Catholic Charities. What we were seeing were so many pregnant And postpartum women, you know, women in general and their families who had experienced immense violence along their journeys back in their home countries. A lot of them were coming from Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador, and hearing them ask for things like, you know, emergency contraception because, you know, they had survived an assault along their journeys. Some of them were 9 months pregnant and had dangerous blood pressure levels and were asking for, you know, supports for prenatal care. And STI testing, they were asking for STI testing too. And, you know, growing up Catholic, it was very complex for me because, you know, we were here working out of the Humanitarian Respite Center run by the Catholic Church, and they had just denied the requests for any kind of reproductive or sexual health care support that these women, the families, you know, young girls were asking for. So, you know, we made several trips back to the border, and we carried some emergency contraception with us, some condoms, you know, just some supplies. So I co-founded Sueños a few months later in, you know, we started going to the border in July of 2018 and didn't really form as a collective until the fall of 2018. And that's when I met my fellow co-founder, Isabel Cepeda, who is a brilliant activist and organizer. We really bonded on this collective that worked at the intersection of immigrant justice and reproductive justice and birth justice, because a lot of the needs were just being magnified and also, you know, unaddressed.
Laura Molinar is the co-founder of the San Antonio-based collective Sueños Sin Fronteras de Texas. We're also talking to video artist Evan Apodaca of San Diego, California, and El Paso Juarez musician Amalia Mondragon. The three are participants in the Border Narratives Project, shifting the current negative perception of border communities to reflect their own diverse vision. When we come back, artists who are respinning the border narrative see their work taking up space on a metaphorically larger canvas.
Ultimately, I see this work as in tandem with like movement work, with political organizing work, and serves as kind of like inspiration, and oftentimes serves as a place for converging like-minded peoples.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Voices from outside the U.S.-Mexico border are the ones that often spread false and often dangerous narratives of border communities, immigrants, and asylum seekers. The Border Narratives Project is a partnership between the Ford Foundation and the Center for Cultural Power, an organization of artists who address issues of immigration and gender and racial justice. Its latest cohort of artists received a Border Narrative Change Grant from NALAC to use their respective mediums to dispel myths and harmful rhetoric. We're continuing our talk with three participants in the project: Laura Molinar, co-founder of the San Antonio-based collective Sueños Sin Fronteras de Texas, video artist Evan Apodaca of San Diego, California, and El Paso Juarez musician Amalia Mondragon. Mondragon explains how she's using her artistry to re-spin those narratives to counter the hate that led to the 2019 mass shooting in an El Paso Walmart.
First off, coming from 2018, 2019 was very traumatic because there was like this increasing vilification of the border, and then it really slapped everybody in 2019. The visuals I saw was how aggressive the policies began to get and more in our faces as border people. In El Paso Juarez, it was like so many fires that we were trying to put out. It was just too much. And then we were left with that narrative floating in the news world and in the media. It was a lot for me. So when I got the Border Narrative Change Grant, I didn't even know what to do. you're in a state of emergency all the time. Just, oh gosh, and we got to go help in this shelter and volunteer over here. And there, and these people need these resources. Winter time, and there's people outside on the floor, and we need to get tents, and we need to find sleeping bags, and we need to get food. And so it was just constant, like, bombarding. It was a lot. And so when the Border Narrative Change Grant came, it was like, is this real? It took me a very long time to process. So it was a lot of contemplation about, what am I going to say? Because there's a large part of me that's very angry. But there's also a huge part of me that has this responsibility to add dimensionality to the narrative of the border. I don't want to go in creating a narrative out of anger. And so I had to really take time to think about the translation of the narrative, because I could go out and say something and take for granted that the rest of the world doesn't know what the border is like. And the only narrative they have is what is on Fox News and what is on CNN. And so it took a while to process, first of all. And then figuring out what that narrative was took me a while. And I actually had to seek a lot of advice from peers and also from NALAC. These were the ideas I had been working on and what I could propose that would make justice to contributing a type of dimensionality to the narrative, to the complexity of the narrative of the border. And then it was getting that idea and then rebuilding my social media and being more conscious about how I'm going to distribute this information, this narrative. And so that's kind of where I feel like the cohorts now are focusing on how we are going to distribute or set out the narrative. Who is the audience? I believe the audience is the border. First of all, the audience is ourselves and the border. I have to believe my own narrative. I have to understand my own narrative and make space for it, because there's always this type of emergency being thrown at us. And it's like a very reactionary lifestyle. And so what happens when you're given the mic and you're supposed to say, what do you say? That's where I feel I'm at right now. In these cohorts with the Center for Cultural Power, it has been a lot of thinking about how to disperse the information around the Border Narrative Project that we've been working on.
I'm going to ask the same of Evan. So since you are in this new cohort, how are you using what was established before to sort of launch how you are going to be sort of rewriting or hope to rewrite this border narrative?
It's been a challenging journey, to say the least, in exploring some of this material. The question came up previously to me, like, do I continue to make work that is challenging in public spaces, that are challenging for people to consume and to face these kinds of truths that are brought up in the work, or like make work that is like more easily consumed and perhaps more palatable and can be seen by many others. And that was a serious question that I like asked myself. Making this work about this particular topic is not easy. I very much resonated with what Amalia brought up, which is to make work out of a place of anger is kind of where some of this comes from. But, you know, that can really catch up to you. It is honestly something that really can affect you, can impact how you live, your health. It needs to continue, and you need to, you know, figure out how to do it in community with people and maintain a sense of balance. Ultimately, I see this work as in tandem with like movement work, with political organizing work, and serves as kind of like inspiration, and oftentimes serves as a place for converging like-minded peoples. I had an exhibition, a solo exhibition in December, which showcased actually, you know, a lot of the stuff that is ultimately very collaborative. We had a series of events that brought together different organizations that organize around militarism, from Anak Bayan, which is like a Filipino diaspora organization, to Palestinian youth movements, which is very active right now all over the U.S. And so, and other organizations like Old School, like Vietnam War era activists. And so ultimately the work serves as like a place for all of these like-minded people to converge and think together, and sort of serves as like a springboard for conversations and organizing too.
Well, Laura, you were originally part of the original Border Narratives Project cohort. Am I correct in that?
Yes.
So what did you learn from that experience, and what are you carrying over into this next part of this project?
I really am grateful for what Amalia had shared, because I feel very similarly when, you know, we were awarded the original grant several years ago, the Border Narrative Change Grant. We were working from a place of crisis, a place of scarcity, trying to get the collective going. You know, as soon as we got the grant, COVID happened, and that completely changed the course of our original project plan. And so we were struggling to kind of figure out, okay, how do we change the narrative when we're internally trying to change the narrative within ourselves of like working from a place of scarcity? We really had to kind of adjust the scope of our project to kind of focus more on mutual aid, because undocumented folks were not eligible to receive federal stimulus checks. They were out of work with no type of support. There were a lot of pregnant people in need of prenatal care that were unhoused. And so, you know, we started our Empowerment Mutual Aid Fund, which has redistributed about $200,000 over the past 4 years in mutual aid support. So grocery assistance, housing assistance, clothing, diapers, different items that families had needed. As we progressed into working through this global crisis, and also, you know, the increase of hateful rhetoric and hateful legislation, you know, enforced by our government leaders here in Texas, we really were able to build our pathway from this place of scarcity to a place of abundance. Through the grant, I mean, we were afforded a lot of wonderful opportunities to learn from different experts and fellow cohort members who had beautiful perspectives to share that really kind of helped inform, you know, the course of our work and where it was going. And what we kind of landed on was that despite, you know, the lack of care from our government, from the federal government and from the state government and from the capitalistic systems that we live under, we wanted to emphasize the narrative that communities of color, undocumented communities specifically, have the knowledge and the collective power to create their own joyful and healthy lives. You know, they're the experts of their lives. And so we became even more invested in advancing these narratives, you know, that are also rooted in the frameworks of reproductive justice and birth justice and immigrant justice that extends beyond borders and beyond the limited scope of choice, people not having, you know, the right to choose their reproductive journeys and outcomes. And so what we also wanted to emphasize is that a lot of folks, like undocumented folks, low-income folks, have never had a choice. And just asserting the importance that it is people's human right to choose their reproductive destiny, whether that is to have children or whether that isn't to have children, and that that ability, that access, is directly tied to the conditions that they're living and surviving under. And so, you know, I'm really proud to say that, you know, because of the grant, like, we have been able to create spaces, community spaces, that incorporate elements of popular education and cultural organizing and art and music and food, to really like create the space for people to voice their needs and to also strengthen that self-advocacy rooted in their self-determination.
So what are your dreams to perhaps see ultimately out of this Border Narratives Project? And it doesn't have to be necessarily based on reality, but I mean, we have to have hope. So I'm curious as to, and I'll start with you, Amalia, you know, what do you want to see coming out of this project? How do you expect to see this, you know, essentially changing the world?
Oh, my. Okay, so, well, I would like to see El Derrumbe de la Pared. I would love to see the river flowing, the Rio Grande, to flow in its natural state with its all its freeness. I would also love to see a border renaissance of music and art and expression and authenticity of people from the border expressing their narrative as people from the border, thinking about making expressions for the border. I would also love to see more resources and infrastructures supported for the border narratives, border people, for border arts. And as my personal dream, I would love for my album to get out there and do amazingly. And it would be great to get some kind of Latin Grammy nomination.
Again.
And win it. and become a well-sought-out songwriter. So those are my sueños. Hashtag sueños acá. And, you know, something that I've been noticing and it's really exciting is I think prior to 2019, at least in my experience, I didn't really know border people from other borders. And I think that unfortunately and fortunately, due to all the crazy stuff that has happened, we have become more connected, and there's a whole network of visibility of different artists and activists around the border who have connected. And I really love that I have met people like the people in the Border Narrative Change Grant. I mean, it's amazing to know about Sueños. It's amazing to know about Evan's project. It's amazing to hear that in El Paso Juarez, we're not the only people going through this. I feel like I met a bunch of primos I didn't know existed. And so it's just very encouraging to get to meet other people who have the same concerns and the same passion for the place that they identify with.
Well, Evan, what are your sueños?
I really want to see an intentional transnational art movement for demilitarization. You know, I think it's there. It's moving, but not necessarily in an intentional, connected way. And so, yeah, that's part of my dreams.
And what about you, Lara, your sueños sin fronteras, so to speak?
Oh, I have a lot. You know, especially right now, these sueños are so important to hold on to, especially with the continued threats on immigrant rights and our bodily autonomy and just our dignity, you know, nationwide and especially like in the state of Texas. One of my sueños, big sueños, sueños of sueños, is to continue creating an environment and having conversations and doing work where reproductive justice and immigrant justice aren't only acknowledged or aren't just frameworks that are just tossed around, but that are actively championed by the community for the well-being and the empowerment of people. And I think that a big part of that is that a lot of healing, you know, needs to happen, a lot of healing and a lot of care for one another. You know, in these conversations about the importance of mutual aid and the importance of being able to advocate on the federal level, the state level, but also on the city level, too. And, you know, we've kind of seen glimpses of what an equitable future looks like rooted in reproductive justice. And we've seen glimpses of that with the passing of San Antonio's first reproductive justice fund that the city council approved in 2023, which has yet to be allocated to community organizations, but it's a step in the right direction. And I think, you know, the more that we can mobilize and care for each other and create spaces and art and, you know, music that really, you know, helps to foster that healing and that care for one another. That's my dream, is for that to be the norm.
Laura Molinar is the co-founder of the San Antonio-based collective Sueños Sin Fronteras de Texas, a social justice group that serves immigrant women and their families in South Texas. We're also talking to Evan Apodaca, a video artist based on the San Diego-Tijuana border. His work focuses on the militarization of the border and the tourism industry. It's based upon militarism, as he calls it. Apodaca's video installation, Monumental Interventions, speaks through toppled, beheaded monument busts against the local military-industrial complex. And we also spoke with Amalia Mondragon, a self-described two-spirit musician who also performs as Tereso Perfecto Contreras. Her forthcoming album is called Transfronteriz. The three are all part of a new cohort of border creatives who received grants to shift the narrative about the border from one of negativity and violence to vibrancy and diversity. The Border Narratives Project is facilitated by the Center for Cultural Power in partnership with the Ford Foundation. We close out today's episode with one of Amalia Mondragon's songs, Qué Calor. We link to the video at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Bastante profuso, te quedas algo confuso, así se siente la vida.